Whatever mood we're in, we like to surround ourselves with things that match it. Whether that's watching a tearjerker when we're feeling blue, or listening to the right music to get inspired, it's important to curate the right vibe. That's why we're excited to partner with Mood, an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC products right to your door. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. And with our promo code REHASH, you can get 20% off your first order on mood.com. Whether that's mind magic gummies for deep work and creativity, sleepy time to get you settled for a restful night, or chill out for some needed relaxation. Sure, you can get THC gummies just about anywhere these days, but why not personalize it? Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorsteps. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code REHASH. So head to mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code REHASH when you check out to save 20% off your first order.
Hannah just got good news.
My good news is that Taylor Swift is coming to Toronto, which I was really holding out hope for. And as we record this episode, I'm currently in line to register for pre-sale.
Her dad texted her out of context. She's coming!
I was like, who?
Bless him.
So it's exciting for me. I kind of like freaked out like a small child.
I'm excited for you, Queen.
Thank you.
You deserve this.
I've never seen her live. This is the perfect concert to see her. She's going through all the songs. And if some bitch gets a ticket that hasn't been following Taylor Swift for as long as I have since they were a kid, I'm gonna fight her.
There was probably a scream heard around the country when the news dropped.
Yes. Everybody's freaking out. 6 dates in Toronto because I don't think she's going anywhere else in Canada. But it means you have to fight with everybody in the whole country.
Yeah, it's very scary when there's like some huge celeb that you need to see and it's like the tickets sell out in like 0.01 milliseconds.
And the thing with this is like I feel like there's a lot of people that are going that are like, yeah, I hear it's a great show. It sounds like a great experience. And I'm like, back of the line. I don't care about you thinking that this sounds like someone would be good to see live. I'm like, I deserve it. I've earned it.
This is your life's work.
This is like just very important to me. And it's embarrassing, but I don't care.
Who cares? Yeah. We're in the age of earnestness.
Yeah. I'm like, get out of here. I deserve it and you don't.
Yeah. Take those bitches down, Hannah. Put them in their place. You are a tween girl living in a 26-year-old's body.
It's true. I'm in stunted adolescence.
And speaking of tween girls. Oh, God. In this episode, we're going to be talking about Cuties, the little French film that triggered an all-out moral panic and revealed the unsavory contradictions about North American culture that we've always known have been there, but we pretend not to see. I'm Aya.
I'm Hannah.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomenons that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is about paradigm shifts, moments that change the way we do things, for better or for worse. After our Dirtbags episode, our rating just plummeted a full point, because I think people were like, how dare you talk about Dasha like that? And then it also bumped down a full notch after our ChatGPT episode because people thought that we were, like, I guess,
unnuanced.
I don't know where they were coming from. I thought I was being pretty level-headed in that.
Yeah, and I was being a crazy conspiracy theorist, and I stand by it.
People can have feelings. Like, people can have different feelings from you on podcasts. You don't need to plummet their ratings.
Stop policing women's emotions.
I'm like, damn, I actually don't think we deserve a 4.7. Like,
no,
that's rude.
No, we're a 5-star, baby.
I Before we delve into the whole what are they doing to our kids frenzy, I think you need to know what this film is really about, because I don't think a lot of people saw it. So I'm going to give you guys a little play-by-play. Spoilers are indeed abound here.
Abound.
Cuties is a 2020 French coming-of-age film about an 11-year-old Senegalese girl named Ami, who lives in a low-income Parisian apartment complex with her mother and her little brother Ishmael. Ami and her family get along generally okay, but there's a bit of tension right now, because they're waiting for her father to get back home from Senegal with his new wife, who is going to be living with them. There's a lot of imagery used in the film with the room that's being built for Ami's father and her, like, new mommy, and I think it kind of serves as this kind of nightmare in a way. Did you feel that too?
Yeah, definitely. I think there are times where it feels like you're maybe in a dream and it's like this forbidden, closed off place.
Yeah, it's kind of like this great unknown. So this whole plot point was inspired by the director Maimouna Doucouré's real life experience growing up in a polygamous household with two mothers. And it's kind of what drives much of the choices that Ami makes throughout the film. Ami is very shy. She's grown up in this pretty traditional Muslim household, and so she's been pretty cut off from the typical cultural touchstones of kids her age. But this changes when she comes across another girl her age named Angelica, who lives in her building. Hannah, do you want to describe the scene where she sees Angelica for the first time?
She's walking by the laundry room, or maybe she's going to do laundry, and Angelica is, like, dancing by herself in the laundry room. And then she starts, like, straightening her hair with the iron on the ironing board, which is, like, I know people do that, but the way she does it is kind of, like, manic. It's, like, really weird. And she's, like, dancing while she's, like, straightening her hair.
She flips her whole head onto the ironing board and then just immediately, like, plants the iron down, and it's, like, sizzling.
But it was, like, that kind of classic moment at that age where, like, you see another girl who's your age and you're like, she's so cool. She has something figured out that I don't. And you're just, like, kind of, you become obsessed with other girls, I feel like, at that age.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You're like, how do I be better at being a tween girl?
Yeah.
Angelica's part of this little girl dance crew called the Cuties with three other girls who are honestly pretty hard, like, very impressively intense about dancing for 11-year-olds. These girls are kind of like three French Nikki Reeds. At first they bully Ami a bit, but eventually she's welcomed into their clique and starts experimenting more with pop culture stuff. There's also this very strange older girl dance crew called the Sweetie Swags, who these little girls are, I guess, supposed to be, like, competing with, and, like, are clearly inspired by the older girls in order to, like, keep up with them in the competition. The thing is that these older girls tend to incorporate very, like, risque dance moves into their routines, like twerking, the kind of stuff you'd see in, like, a Spice music video.
Yeah, and then also, like, in some of their videos are just, like, flashing the camera, but then I think we later learn they're in high school.
Yeah, I think, like, they're also technically underage. I guess they look like they're, like, 26.
Yeah, yeah. But when it comes around and we see them at school talking to, like, teen boys, I was like, what?
Yeah, they look so students? Much older than the boy
they
actors.
Look like adult women.
So, for the most part, Ami is accepted as a part of the group on the condition that she's relegated to the videographer of their routines. But then Angelica has this falling out with one of the girls in the Cuties named Yasmin, because in this moment where they're trying to catfish Angelica's crush, Yasmin turns on the camera and the crush is like, ew, a little girl, as he should. So Angelica beats Yasmin's ass, which seems to make Ami, like, really happy. They cut to Ami's face while Yasmin's getting her ass beat and she's, like, smiling.
Schadenfreude.
We cannot say that word. No, I think she just takes pleasure in, like, the power of it all.
Yeah. And God, I knew Angelicas at that age. I knew girls like that, that were hard like that.
She's, like, hard, but she's also kind of, like, a little sweetie at the same time.
Yeah.
So Ami kind of sees her opportunity here and suggests to Angelica that she take Yasmin's part in the dance routine because she's been practicing a lot at home. It ends up working, and Ami, who has stolen the phone of the contractor, I guess that's what he is, it's never really clear, who's been working on her dad's new room, and is basically now constantly consuming even more, like, lewd music videos on the internet. Her mom isn't around very much because it's implied that she's working a lot. So Ami has a lot of unsupervised time to do this. Mm-hmm. And she ends up becoming a bit of a leader of the Cuties and convinces them to incorporate, like, even more provocative moves into the routine. They film this music video on a staircase, which I think is, like, the main source of contention for people who bothered to watch the film.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to in a bit. And the music video is a hit online. So Ami is feeling very good about herself, and she now has it in her head that being sexual is what it takes to get ahead in life. This is demonstrated a couple of times in the film. In one scene, the girls sneak into this laser tag venue, and she does this, like, sexy dance for these, like, really gross, fully adult men who work there in order to get the girls out of trouble, and it works.
Yeah.
During the scene, we were both watching, and we were like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, it was very uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. And then at another point, the contractor confronts Ami about stealing his phone, and she starts trying to strip for him. And thankfully, this time, he's like, ew, what the fuck are you doing? But this is when she runs away with a phone and locks herself in a bathroom and, like, immediately posts a photo of her vagina to social media. This is when things start to go south for Ami, as you could probably guess. Until now, she's understood that sex gets you attention and it gets you out of trouble. But she's too young to discern between, like, good and bad attention. So the kids at school who have all seen the photos start to slut shame her, and the other cuties are mad because she's compromised their reputation, and they kick her out of the group. This is when Ami also starts to get physically violent. She, like, stabs this kid in the hand with a pen.
Oh my god, right.
Who calls her a slut, and she tries to beat up one of the sweetie swags, which ends up getting her pantsed by them, which is so fucking weird.
So weird.
Like, they're just, like, these fully grown women are, like, at least 17 years
old.
I bet
they're supposed to be 14 or something.
Maybe, but it's, like, they're pantsing this 11-year-old child. Yeah, it's so weird. It's just weird. It's not even creepy. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah.
The stabbing incident gets Ami in trouble with her mother and her aunt, who try to give her an exorcism, but it doesn't work. They also get a religious leader to come in and examine her, and he decides that there is indeed no evil spirit in her. This all culminates in the wedding day / dance competition day, where Ami abandons the wedding before she even gets there, puts on her very risque costume, and runs to the competition. On the way, she sees Yasmin walking towards the venue and fully just yeets Yasmin into the canal.
It's ridiculous.
Like, it's actually crazy.
It's insane.
You're kind of like, what the fuck just happened? What just happened?
She's just fully, like, showgirls, like, yeah, moment.
It truly was showgirls, yeah. So then she shows up, and the other girls are like, okay, I guess you have to do it, because where the fuck is Yasmin? I don't even think they ask. I think they're just kind of like, oh, you're here. I guess you're on stage. We have another provocative dance performance, but the audience doesn't take to it and, like, boos them. Mm-hmm. So Ami has this kind of realization moment and runs off stage crying. She runs all the way home, and she's embraced by her mother, who's clearly forgiven her. But when she begs her mother not to go to the wedding, her mom puts on her headdress and leaves, which I think signifies that she's going to go and she's going to stay within this established order.
Yeah.
The final shot is on me wearing regular kids' clothes, because for most of the film, she's been wearing her little brother's, like, tiny t-shirts in the style of, like, a crop top.
Yeah.
So she's in regular clothes, and she's playing jump rope, and it's honestly, like, a really beautiful shot, because the camera is kind of panning up, and it's supposed to be panning up towards the sky. The camera is situated on her as she's playing jump rope, and then it starts panning upwards towards the sky, but Ami continues to jump into the frame, and it's a gorgeous shot.
Yeah.
We watched Cuties together, and for some reason, Netflix only has a dubbed version of the film.
Yeah, which, so weird.
Yeah, like, super unfortunate. I couldn't find any other versions of it. And it just sucked because I think a lot was missing in, like, translation and in cadence. But nonetheless, we got the gist.
Yeah.
What are your general thoughts on Cuties?
I, like, as far as, like, the quality of the film, like, I thought it was an alright film. I wasn't like, this is the best movie I've ever seen, but I didn't think it was bad by any means. Like, it was a good film. I knew going into it that it was controversial, and that, like, there was going to be some stuff that would make me uncomfortable, and, like, I did feel uncomfortable in a lot of moments, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think most of the movie, I think, does a good job at, like, toying the line. It can be a hard movie to watch at times, just, like, as an adult, but I don't know, if you've seen 13, like, I don't think it should make you any more uncomfortable than that, for the most part.
Yeah, I think, like, films can make people uncomfortable. Yeah. Like, they don't necessarily have to play by moral standards.
Yeah.
I felt like I would have potentially liked it a lot more if we had seen the undubbed version, because there were certain moments that weren't played for laughter, but ended up being kind of, like, unintentionally funny because the voice actor was being so weird.
Goofy and all the voice actors seem too old to voice their characters.
Yeah, for the kids. It was just odd. It was also hard because a lot of like the diegetic sound was missing in order to do the dubbing. Like, there was a lot of moments in the film that were kind of silent.
Yeah.
Where there should have been background noise. And so it was kind of disorienting sometimes. But that's not the fault of the film itself.
No.
I did feel like there were some plot lines that led to nowhere. Like, there's a scene where Ishmael overflows the tub and floods their apartment. And we never see Yami's mom react to it. And we never see how she cleans it up.
Yeah. And, like, even I think, you know, in concluding the film, the, like, the shift that happens in Ami is so
abrupt.
I mean, the shift from her being like
a sheltered Muslim girl.
Yeah, and experimenting to being like a full-on lunatic who pushes another girl into the lake.
And that's like, another thing.
It feels so fast.
We never see Yasmin again. Yeah. Like, there is no resolution to what happens to Yasmin. It just like ends.
Yeah. And so it's like, wait, so she just went from being violent, had this moment, and then is now like skipping rope. That stuff, like, it just felt a little bit sudden and stuff, but like generally, like, the themes of the film are really interesting.
Yeah, it's very esoteric film.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it, like, there's a lot of fantasy sequences or like magical realism elements to it that I think were really interesting.
Yeah.
For the most part, like, I did think it was pretty enjoyable and like a thoughtful film. I also thought the cinematography for the most part was like really beautiful. And I think it gave us a really interesting insight into, like, Senegalese culture in Paris. Like, yeah. I thought that was really cool. Definitely. It's not something you see, you know, represented very much. No. I also thought the acting was, like, incredible, especially from the child actors. They had, like, a really heavy load.
Yeah, tough roles to do, yeah.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job. So, the film premiered at Sundance in 2020 to a pretty positive response. Ducouré opened the screening by saying, "I wish during the next hour and a half that each one of you will become an 11-year-old little girl." And it seemed to pay off because she went on to win the directing award.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It also generally received pretty positive reviews from critics. Peter Bradshaw from The Guardian said, "It all hangs together and the good faith with which it is presented to the audience is clear enough." Bernadette Barton from Salon said, "We need more feminist stories like Cuties that illuminate the constraints girls and women face and help us chart a path to full gender equality." And Angie Hahn from Mashable said, "In both horrific scenes and adorable ones, what remains consistent is Ducouré's honesty." But if you go to Rotten Tomatoes today to read these reviews, you might be a bit shocked to find that while the film has a critic score of 87%, audiences gave it 15%.
15.
I'm shocked it was that high, to be honest. Audience reviews are a wee bit different in tone. Here's some of what they say. Ethan F. says, "Vile and disgusting. Unbelievable that this is a real movie." Ty B says, "Not sure the message this film was trying to get across, but it failed. As a parent, I would never allow my child to act in anything close to this." Angelica G says, "This movie is disgusting. Over-sexualization of little girls. Totally unnecessary. Not worth watching." And Edward L says, "I was expecting a really well-put-together, amazing movie based on the reviews given by the site's critics. What I witnessed was truly horrifying. The glorification of this kind of content is morally wrong and should never have ever been made sexualizing children." But I think Dustin D really, really got to the heart of, like, he gave us some pretty meta commentary.
Dustin D. Are we in, like, grade 7 French class?
I think Rotten Tomatoes makes you put your first name and your initial, but it is so, so corny. Dustin D said, yeah, that does sound like someone we'd have a crush on. In, like, 2005. He said, "The discrepancy between the critics and audience scores highlights the distance between elite and normie sensibilities." Do you have any inclination as to why this discrepancy between critics and audiences may have happened?
Well, some people are trained and experienced at evaluating art based off of its skill and merits, and some people base their opinions on art on, like, moral things that they've taken away from it that aren't even there.
Do any of those reviews seem to you like those people watched Cuties?
No.
Like, the language I find very vague, right? Like, not sure the message this film was trying to get across. It's like, if you watched the movie, you'd be like, yeah, I get the message that this film is getting across.
I think it's like, people are so unable to take one step further into, like, evaluating
the content of what they've seen.
I don't even think they would bother to watch it. Like, yeah, I just probably. Like this guy, you know, in saying like, I was expecting a good movie based on the reviews, but what I saw was really horrifying. It's like, I actually just don't think you watch the movie. If you read the reviews and then you watch the movie, you'd probably be like, yeah, it checks out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just very skeptical that these people saw it to begin with.
Okay, interesting. Why do you think that is?
Well, we'll get into it. At Sundance, Netflix purchased international distribution rights to the film, which would expose it to the wider American audience for the first time. And in order to promote the film, Netflix abandoned the original Cuties poster, which shows the girls dancing down the street, holding shopping bags and wearing like women's bras and underwear over their clothes. And instead, they opted for a poster which is pretty different. I'm going to show it to you. Do you want to describe it for the listeners?
So it has the four members of the Cuties in their, like, performance outfits from the final performance, which in the film is the moment where Ami, like, has this realization that she's not comfortable with what she's doing anymore. So it feels very strange to me that they would use it as a representation of the film and like its themes and its contents. But yeah, it's the girls in their like performance outfits, which, you know, are very cropped tops and like short shorts, and they're all kind of in a variety of like provocative poses. Like one of them is like on her knees, one of them is like in a twerking position, one of them has her legs spread open, and it's like, I'm so confused as to why they would use this for the poster if they wanted people to like take a chance on the film.
Yeah, exactly. It's like really confusing. I still don't fully understand why Netflix was like, yeah, this is the poster that represents what this movie's about. Like, this doesn't get across anything.
No, it's counterintuitive to the film's message.
Exactly. So this is how the film was introduced to American audiences. And when it got released, there was a hashtag shooting around the internet called Cancel Netflix. It was the number one trending hashtag on Twitter after the film dropped on the site.
Wow.
Ducre received death threats. People who defended the film online were called pedophiles. People accused Obama of being behind it and like...
Wait, what?
Of course, obviously. They just... Any conspiracy, they're like, Obama did it!
And what did Obama do exactly?
Who knows? And it, you know, as per usual, was seized up by QAnon conspiracy people who, yet again, accused the film of belonging to the global lefty pedophile cabal. The Republican Senator Josh Hawley sent a letter to Netflix asking them to please immediately remove this film from your platform. Ted Cruz joined in on the charge. Tucker Carlson screamed about it like ad nauseum on his show. And then in probably the most extreme gesture of backlash, a grand jury in Tyler County, Texas, indicted Netflix for, quote, knowingly promoting work that depicted lewd exhibition of girls under 18, declaring the Cuties, quote, appeals to the prurient interest in sex and has no serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. Which is, that was part of the censorship laws that came about after the rating system came about. Yeah. They were like, you know, how basically the states delegated the litigation of obscenity laws to the states. So each individual state can have a different take on obscenity laws, and they have to decide whether or not the material has literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. So this is basically an obscenity law, and they're saying that Cuties breached it. And that's the law that ended the golden age of porn, which is crazy.
Damn. See, I didn't realize that, like, this film got so much press. I'd only heard about it from you. I didn't realize Tucker Carlson was talking about it. I didn't realize it went to court.
No, it was It was a huge deal. The state legislators felt that the promotion of Cuties would have destructive consequences, and the district attorney's father, Brian Babin, wanted to bring charges against Netflix because he thought it met, quote, the U.S. legal definition of child pornography. Netflix stood pretty strong to their credit during the backlash and defended the film on the basis that it was, quote, a powerful story about the pressure young girls face on social media and from society more generally growing up. They also said, we'd encourage anyone who cares about these important issues to watch the movie. Obviously, this is not something that they'd be getting from this particular crowd. I think this review of the film on Google, which it has over 1,400 likes, basically sums up the majority of people deriding the film. This person had said, This film has inspired me to start a dance group with my friends. The amount of older adults that come to watch us is amazing. A lot of them offer candy and the chance to see some adorable puppies and kittens. Although since they've started coming, there's been a lot of us not showing up. Definitely would recommend, as it's changed many people's lives. Dot, dot, dot. No, but on a serious note, this film is traumatizing and creepy. I haven't even seen it.
Traumatizing?
They haven't seen it. Well, we have seen the film.
We've seen the film.
And I want to ask, what was your take on its portrayal of the kids? Like, do you see any validity to the criticisms?
I will say there are a few instances in the film where the dance moves that the girls are doing are provocative. It's part of the story. Like, you know, it'd be hard to tell the story without having them do it. And I don't think that, like, dance should be inherently sexualized, especially when, like, it's children exploring the art form. I do think there are instances where the cinematography and the camera work isn't helping in having us watch it from, like, a neutral position. Like, I think there's a way that it can be shot where we're like, oh, they're doing this, but, like, I'm watching from afar and I am able to assess that, like, it's strange that it's kids doing it. But there's just moments where there's, like, panning over body parts, and they do it quite a few times while they're doing these dance moves that does make me uncomfortable and I do think was unnecessary. Do I think that they were doing it because they wanted to, like, sexualize and exploit these children? No, but I think it was a bad choice on behalf of the filmmakers. That being said, overall, if you're following the film and you're following its themes and its messages, which aren't, it's not like they're, like, written between the lines, it's pretty explicit. This is not a celebrated thing. The film isn't celebrating, like, the sexualization of children. It's just exploring, like, the nuances of being that age and being introduced to these type of things.
Exactly. I completely agree. I do think some of the scenes, especially, like, the music video scene and the final performance in particular, were definitely, like, pushing some boundaries when it came to, like, eroticizing what we're seeing. I talk on my channel a lot about the ways that a camera can, like, eroticize a scenario, and that often comes with, like, close-up shots, shots where the body part is separated from the person, slow-motion shots, like, basically shots that are put together in a montage to evoke a certain mood, and, like, lined up together to send a certain message. And those scenes do feature a lot of that pretty heavily.
Yeah.
I think what, like, Ducre could have done was shoot the girls from, like, only wide angles.
Exactly.
Because, whenever the camera zooms out, you really get a sense of how goofy they actually look.
Yeah.
And you can see what's actually happening here. But if the camera's not allowing you to see the full picture and kind of manipulating the eyes, like, yeah, I can see how that would be a little much. But I don't think it's intentional. I think it's a mistake more than anything.
No, I don't think that they were operating with, like, the intentions of, we're going to secretly make, like, child pornography, call it art, and get away with it.
Exactly.
Because, guys, and just in case you're wondering, I don't think there's that much money to be made in independent French cinema. Like, it's not like this is genius business plan or something.
No, not at all. And, like, I do want to be clear, too, because, like, a lot of this discussion came around, oh, the child actors were being taken advantage of. I do want to be clear that there were a lot of measures taken to make sure that the girls' time on set was comfortable and safe. Mm-hmm. Ducre explained that she cultivated a climate of trust, that she calls it, between herself and the kids. And she said, I explained to them everything I was doing and the research that I had done before I read the story. I was also lucky that these girls' parents were also activists, so we were all on the same side. At their age, they've seen this kind of dance. Any child with a telephone can find these images on social media these days. She also said that they had a child psychologist on set who worked, like, a lot with the girls and also worked with them after the film came out to help them navigate their newfound fame, right, which is something that I think is very overlooked in this type of situation. I think that's actually pretty admirable.
Yeah.
She also said that the scenes we're seeing are composite shots. So in the sense that the girls weren't actually dancing like that all in one go. Like, there were a lot of breaks between each shoot. So each scene or shot. You know, so there was kind of, like, a foundation here. But I do think there's a conversation to be had about the difference between, and, like, this is something I actually think applies a lot to Sam Levinson, although I actually do think he's kind of malintentioned in a way that Maimouna Ducre isn't.
Yeah.
But the difference between, like, actual real life exploitation of an actor and the negative effects of an exploitative camera, right?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes the camera can be leering even if the actors are comfortable in the moment. And I think that goes for, like, Euphoria.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, on set, you don't feel the difference from, like, a camera being close up to a camera being wide. Like, you're doing the same thing. Like, you're not experiencing that in the moment. But when you see the product, how it's portraying you, like, that's different. I think it's so great that the actors were taken care of and felt comfortable on set and all of that. But all you have to do is look at someone like Natalie Portman in The Professional when she was, what, like 11 or 12.
What happened after?
Well, yeah, exactly. What happened after, which is she was an object of, well, I don't know what the right word lust. Is. Yeah, she was like an object of lust to grown men and like experienced a lot of harassment and a lot of shit because of that. And it's like, that's not necessarily the fault of the people who made the film. And that doesn't mean she had a bad experience making the film, but it's just something you have to consider.
And the people who made the film were a bit creepy in that context.
In that context, they were. But like, I agree.
Yeah. It's like there could be fallout from the film that if they were comfortable on set, doesn't mean that they might not be sexualized outside of the film as actors. It's very complicated.
It is.
There's this really poignant article by Kyra Connor called Watching the Outrage Over Cuties as a Survivor of Pedophilia, where she very bravely talks about the abuse that she suffered as a child at the hands of her father. And she defends the film for what she views to be a really thoughtful portrayal of adolescent sexuality. She says, "The argument that images of girls dancing like women will delight pedophiles forgets that pedophilia is a perversion, a sickness unworthy of consideration in the process of creating sensitive, highly contextual art. Netflix's marketing team deserves scrutiny, but Ducouré's vision is not exploitative, callous, or cruel." And I just think that's a really beautiful take on it.
Yeah.
Do you think the film having a female director who could, like, you know, relate to the child subjects changed anything about the viewing experience for you? Like, I'm thinking about this in comparison to a film like Lolita, which also has a child subject in pretty sexual scenarios,
yeah,
but was directed by fucking Adrian Lyne, a man.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. Adrian Lyne's Lolita is disgusting. Like, it's uncomfortable. No, just because it's inherently uncomfortable to see, like, young girls be portrayed that way, but it's uncomfortable because you're like, wow, you're really filming her that way. Wow, you really included the scene that you didn't need to include. And at least in Cuties, you're like, okay, this is inspired by music videos. This is inspired by the types of culture that the girls, like, the camera work is inspired by the types of media that the girls are consuming. And so it's replicating that a bit, where it's like Lolita, he's just like, what if we shot this child like she was a grown adult? And it's
actually like,
yeah. So I do think it makes a difference. I think there's like a level of like empathy. And again, if we're talking about the conditions of the set and the experiences of the girls on set, like, I think that would make a big impact.
Being filmed by a woman who has had this direct experience, it just changes, yeah, both the experience of the actor and, to me, the experience of the viewer.
Yeah, I think the experience of the viewer, but then it's hard because we're talking from the perspective of people who can appreciate that, where it's like there are a lot of people who are going to see the film and not be thinking about that at all. And it's like, it makes me feel more comfortable about watching it, but like, I don't know if that's going to be the case universally.
That's true. That is true. I think it just makes me really sad that this is going to like impact Ducouré's career, because
yeah.
We don't really get to see these stories about little Muslim girls that often,
no.
Especially ones that don't, like, you know, languish in hardship. Like, she's not abjectly suffering in this, right? Like, she's a little girl and it gives her a lot of humanity. And I don't know, I think in many ways it's also kind of like a light and really endearing film. Like, it was kind of funny in a lot of points. It's really sweet and tender, despite, like, its heavier subject matter.
And it does, like, I think it does a really good job at capturing being that age, which is a very complicated time.
It is.
For, like, every girl. Because you are suddenly thinking about sex, you're becoming more exposed to, like, sexualized imagery, and you're trying to figure out what are the boundaries for you to express that or experiment that. What are you comfortable with, and what do you just want to project into the world? And then every girl sort of at a different stage with that relationship, I feel like, at that age. Like, I knew girls that felt, like, way more mature. I knew girls that, like, weren't doing
anything.
Yeah. And it's interesting.
I didn't have my first kiss till like middle of high school. And like a lot of girls in middle school were already like making out with boys. And there's nothing wrong with either of those things.
I knew girls who had sex in middle school. Like,
that is really crazy, actually.
But
yeah, everyone just has different experiences at that age. Everyone's maturing differently. And it depends on the context of where you're from.
Totally. You know. And it's a confusing time because you're not in a place where you're really talking to your parents about that. And no one's talking to you about that. And then, yeah, when you can add, like, her home life to it, like, she's not around her parents very much and she's from a much more conservative background.
It is why she kind of goes this more extreme route, because it's, like, kids who are kind of repressed, yeah, like, are more, they're more willing, or, like, they lack the gray area in those situations to be able to take things slowly, right?
Yeah, and she has no one to, like, kind of talk her through it and, like, maybe slow her down a bit. It's just not a conversation that's happening.
Exactly. It's also, like, I don't know, maybe the film made some mistakes in the way that it filmed the girls, and I do think it did, but also, it does provoke this really uncomfortable conversation about this, like, weird, perverse culture we live in surrounding the line between youth and sex, right? Like, growing up doing dance, if you were to watch the tapes from my dance recitals, like, the girls were doing crazy things. Some of the girls did, like, a chair routine for one of the recitals, and it was like, that's crazy. These girls are 13.
Toddlers in tiaras? There was once a girl dressed as Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman on Toddlers in Tiaras, and they aired that on television.
Yeah, it's a really perverse culture we live in, and I just feel like really contradictory and confusing. I think our culture has trouble reconciling with this weird tension between the way our culture sexualizes young people and then the fact that young people are capable of sexual feelings. And Connor kind of speaks to this in her article. She says, "Cuties is a reminder of the dangers of the digitally connected world, but also of the fact that sexual feelings aren't always contained within bodies old enough to understand them." And I just think the film is trying to get at that. I don't necessarily know if it succeeds, but it's like, that's actually kind of brave. Like, a lot of films aren't ready to tackle that. We have to moralize, like, every film about children. We have to make them so pure. We can't have a complicated lens on kids because we have this extremely, like, puritanical culture, right? And it is hard, because it is hard to film kids without doing the thing that you're trying to comment on. So I don't know. It's like, part of me kind of admires that she attempted it. I don't know if it was successful, but
no, I don't think. I mean, we recently watched Little Miss Sunshine, and I think that's a good example of how, you know, Abigail Breslin's character is doing this, like, very provocative, kind of supposed to be a sexy dance, but it just feels so awkward, and like, it's funny because of the way they styled her and the way they shot it. It's like so clear what the intentions are.
It's like the sexuality of like a male stripper is kind of what they were going for, like, yeah. and they filmed her only from wide angles.
Yeah, and it's like, you don't feel weird at all watching it, when like, I did feel weird at points in Cuties, and I think that there were artistic decisions that could have been made that could have probably benefited the girls and the film in that way. And like, I don't think the film is completely perfect, but I also, yeah, I don't think they were operating with bad intentions. And like, I don't know, think about something like Big Mouth, which people accuse of being like child porn, and there's not even a child involved in that.
I know, it's quite literally animated. That show is so good. That is
and
a great show.
It's for adults.
Exactly. And that is also a brave show. Like, really, actually. Yeah. And I think it is successful.
Yeah, I love Big Mouth.
There's this discussion that Aja Romano and Alyssa Wilkinson had about Cuties for Vox, and they made a pretty good point. This is kind of a long quote, but I thought it was interesting. They say, "Cuties often takes the girl's perspective in order to illustrate and dissect a broader issue, the hypersexualization of young girls, often tied to images they are fed by advertising and entertainment, which they turn around and recreate. I'm not always sure it is entirely successful in that aim. Trying to depict something in the context of critiquing it isn't always successful. But it's going for something gutsy and raising an important concern about young women's lives in an internet age, wrapped up in an engaging coming-of-age story. We are meant to be uncomfortable because the movie wants to shake us out of our complacency and make us think about how the images that young people see profoundly mold and shape their view of themselves." And I think that was fascinating. Like, I think in a way the movie is uncomfortable. It could have done things differently, but maybe there is something to be said for the discomfort. Like, maybe there is something to be said for a movie that actually, I wasn't uncomfortable watching Little Miss Sunshine, but didn't really make me think about that. But this movie, because I was like, oh, I like want to like crawl out of my own skin, kind of pushed that idea a little bit.
Yeah, that's the intention of the film. It wasn't the intention of Little Miss Sunshine, and that's a good point.
Yeah. I think it's just a gray area. Like, it's just tough. So, I think it's safe to characterize the backlash against cuties as a full-blown moral panic.
Yeah.
Hannah, you listened a lot to You're Wrong About. I don't know if all the listeners do. I assume everyone knows what a moral panic is, but I think you should. Do you want to just give us a little brief definition?
Yeah, and if you're listening to this and not listening to You're Wrong About, that's crazy.
What you doing?
What you doing? Well, like, I think of a moral panic as sort of like a folk demon or something like that, where we kind of get all up in arms about, oh my god, I can't believe I'm having such a hard time defining this.
It is hard to define. Like, I think there is no right or wrong answer, but it is difficult to define because it's not something that really has been properly defined.
Yeah, I guess it's like a sensation and like a
phenomena,
thank you, that occurs in a culture about the status or the state of that culture's morality, and like falsely projects those fears onto art or like news stories or people as like portraying, I don't know, like folk devils.
Yeah, that's a perfect definition, I think. That was really good.
Thank you.
There are these sociologists, Eric Good and Nachman Ben Yehuda, who do define moral panics, and they define them as instances when substantial numbers of the members of societies are subject to intense feelings of concern about a given threat, which a sober assessment of the evidence suggests is either non-existent or considerably less than would be expected from the concrete harm posed by that threat. Such overheated periods of intense concern are typically short-lived. In such periods, which sociologists refer to as moral panics, the agents responsible for the threat, or folk devils, as you said, Hannah, are stereotyped and classified as deviants. And they say there's like a few things that make a moral panic a moral panic. Like, it kind of has to hit these markers. There has to be like a heightened level of concern expressed by the panickers. There has to be an increased level of hostility towards the people who provoked the panic. There has to be a bit of consensus among the group panicking that the threat is real and serious. Like, they believe it's real. The response has to be disproportionate to the actual event that happened or is thought to be happening. And it has to be kind of volatile. Like, the panic will erupt just as quickly as it dies out. Would you say that's more or less what happened here with cuties?
Yeah. Yeah, because no one is talking about it now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This didn't happen until the film reached a wider American audience. It was received fine basically most other places. So it really invites this question of why the U.S. is such a hotbed for moral panic. I really want to like get into this because I think it's fascinating.
Because it's a country founded by fucking Puritans.
My first jot note is, well, the country was founded by Puritans.
Okay.
That's crazy.
I mean, isn't that, duh? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like non-secular, basically, as a country.
They came to America.
They were like, Europe is so unpure and also we're poor, so we have to go to North America.
Yeah, so it's like, of course. I mean, it was founded on its belief. It's like a new country founded on its belief system, so they get really up in arms about that shit.
Yeah, they have a lot of beliefs. A lot of beliefs up in the air. I also think, and I think about this all the time, I think the U.S. is unique in the way that it kind of operates in this culture of fear. Like, yeah. It has fostered a really strong culture of fear. I think about this a lot in terms of conspiracy theories and why they're such a big thing in the U.S. And I think, like, a country whose government has been proven to be so, so deceitful over the years. Like, the way they function in almost completely in private and in a way that often undermines their own citizens.
Yeah.
Has led to this, like, lack of trust among the people, mm-hmm. which I think also makes it a really welcome environment for conspiracies. Mm-hmm. I also think the U.S. has this media machine which really teeters the line of prudishness and perversity. Like,
yeah.
It's so obsessed with sex, but it refuses to be frank about sex. And then it's also like super moralizing about it in a way that other Western countries aren't. So I just think it's like this mixture of puritanical culture, culture of fear, this perverse like obsession with sex and like moralizing about sex, and then this extreme lack of media literacy.
Yeah. And, like, you can really only explore sexuality in the States if it's done with some kind of moral overtone.
Exactly.
And so a movie like Cuties,
or to sell a product,
or to sell something, and a movie like Cuties, which like there is a moral message, or there's like there is something that it's getting at, but it's more nuanced and it's less explicitly like sex is bad, this don't do it, is like already hard for them to digest. And then yeah, the minute it's about kids and, you know, childhood in the US is much more of like a
precious thing.
Yeah,
they're really like, let's lock kids in these big suburban cages and make sure they have no way of getting around until they're 16 so we can control everything they do. Make sure they can't drink till they're 21. Like, the US really loves prolonging children's dependency on adult,
but then make so much money off of like exploiting teenage sexuality at the same time.
Because yeah, everything's about money in the States. Like, nothing is actually about
anything.
Yeah, that's what their belief system is founded on, is quite literally money.
Money.
You know, this all leads me to wonder, do you think the story would have been different if the film was about a bunch of little American white girls? Do you think the moral panic would have happened as quickly?
I think it might have been worse.
You think so?
Because America is much more comfortable sexualizing young girls of color.
It is true.
Especially young black girls, than they are sexualizing little white blonde girlies.
I'm just wondering how they get away with things like toddlers and tiaras and all that sort of stuff in the US. You know what I mean? Like,
I think maybe because toddlers and tiaras, it's never said explicitly. You watch and you're like, that's insane that you're showing like a little girl doing that. But no one talks about sex. Yeah. No one's saying they're doing this to be sexy.
Yeah.
There aren't other themes.
I guess if it was made in the US, it wouldn't have been as...
I mean, like, I'm always surprised that 13 isn't talked about as, you know, I don't know, pearl clutchy.
That's what I mean. Like,
I know those girls were like 12, 13, but they look older than the girls in Cuties.
Mm.
And 13, it's like showing them doing like inappropriate stuff, but it's not really as much of an emphasis, it feels like, on their bodies in this way. Like, it doesn't feel like they're trying to like have as much spectacle around their bodies, which Cuties is about dance, and it's about a very specific kind of dancing, where the whole point is to show like what the body can do in those ways.
That's true.
No, I think if it was made in the United States, like, they would go to jail.
They'd be like, how dare you put white children in this position. Yeah, that's also, that is really true. I do think children in general have become this rallying cry for people on all sides of the political spectrum, because they're kind of like blank canvases that you can just project all of your values onto.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, anytime kids are involved in anything, it feels like the left and the right clasp hands and they're like, the pedo cabal, and we're all like, yeah. And I don't know, it's just fascinating.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's even with the Satanic Panic, right? Which is a famous moral panic. Like, it's so easy to get, especially the feminist movement, on board with something that is otherwise like a very conservative issue if you evoke children. Like, it's fail-proof to bring up kids a lot of the time. And it sucks because, like, we don't really give kids the autonomy to, like, speak for themselves or speak for what makes them comfortable and what they're okay with. So we can just use them as, like, these figures to project stuff onto. And they don't – it doesn't matter what they want or need or what they're thinking, because then we're like, you're a dumb kid. What do you know?
Yeah, exactly. I just feel like it really goes back to that classic case of, like, people who are most insensitive about an issue actually – caring about that issue the least. Like, do you think Ted Cruz cares about the welfare of children anywhere? Probably not.
No, obviously not. Also, just like, family values is a sham. It's just like a talking point.
Fuck the family.
Yeah.
Connor has this really devastating quote. She says, although some detractors have good intentions, I'm not convinced that everyone who is professing disgust about this gentle film is motivated by morality or reason. A few days before my father died, I learned he had a website. Since 1999, he had mostly used it to promote UFO conspiracy theories, but eventually it became a place for him to rant about the supposed spread of liberal perversion in America. The last entry before his death was in part dedicated to me, whom he called childless, barren, and alone. I imagine he would have detested Cuties and the empathy it showed for its young characters. But it's true. Like, I just feel like the people who were loudest about this and wanted to silence the film and wanted to send death threats to Maimouna Doucouré care actually much less than she does about children and whether or not they're okay, you know?
And even just in terms of the actors that they claim to be concerned over, it's like, you're the ones that are propelling this narrative that the children are being sexualized and exploited and, like, causing people to look at the children in that light, right? Whereas she is actually taking steps to minimize the harm of that.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think it's like, you're okay to, like, take these kids and throw them to the wolves and then also just, like, accuse them of being in child pornography because you don't actually care about the welfare of them. Yeah.
Exactly.
It is that classic thing in the United States. I mean, and not even just the States, but just with conservatism generally, it's like we love to speak on behalf of people, but we don't actually care what ends up happening to them, and we don't really care about what they want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. So I've been thinking a lot about, like, what the shift is here, right? Because, like, when I was doing this episode, I was like, oh, fuck. The real shift was probably the Jeffrey Epstein stuff and the Wayfair stuff and the Pizzagate. But I do think that this shift happened within the realm of art. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it made people think a bit more. And I know because it's a moral panic, it just dropped off the face of the earth. And we don't really think about cuties anymore because it's been basically ejected off the internet. But I am wondering what the shift is here, because I do think there was a shift. It's like one of the first things I thought of when we were planning this season.
Yeah, you've wanted to talk about this film for a while.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know, what do you see the shift being?
Well, I think for one, it's still up on Netflix, right?
Yes.
I think that that's very interesting. I think it's like, I mean, fuck the streamers and like everything, especially right now, but I think the fact that it's remained on the platform and, like, they've stood their ground at least in keeping it up there is comforting.
Yeah, it was weird to see people like Netflix who care all about money kind of defending something on the basis of art. Like, it was actually really nice to see that happening.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for another project Maia is doing, we've both been, like, looking into rating systems and the history of film and obscenity laws in the United States. And I think you don't really hear that much about it in a modern day context nowadays, because I feel like people are generally used to just like making things for the rating systems and for those like imposed rules. And so, I don't know. I think I was going to say it shows that some people do still make art like this, but it's French people and there is still backlash in the United States.
Well, yeah, it's like it did really reveal kind of the cultural differences and really put them to the forefront, which has happened like time and time again in the movie industry.
Yeah, obviously. The French are always showing us how
the French are always provoking the U.S. in some way or another. I do think also it was a shift in the way that we think about art and discuss it on the internet. It kind of illuminated this difference, like that guy was saying, between the elites and normies, but between kind of like the industry who loved this film and like the public, and just the difference in those two audiences, I guess. Like, I don't know. It was so fascinating to see. This was also kind of, to me, like one of the first examples I had seen of like review bombing. So like a lot of those reviews that you'll see on Google, those like one, like if you go and look up cuties, it like has a glaring 1-star review. And it's like a lot of people who again, hadn't seen the film going in and reviewing the film to kind of like push it down.
And it's so interesting to think about, because like back in the day, you could have a controversial film, but you're really only hearing, I mean, this is like pre-internet I'm talking about, but like you'd still be getting like a proper critic's assessment of the film. That's what you would refer to before seeing the film. Like that's the opinion that would come out. And I don't know, now it's just crazy to think that like that holds so much less importance than like a bunch of random people who have like accounts on movie reviewing websites.
Yeah, it really makes you think. To me, it was like the first time that we were seeing the like real life effects of this whole Jeffrey Epstein case play out. I think if we are going to zoom out and like look at this from a few years on, we're going to be like, oh yeah, this was the era in which people were freaking out about the cabal left, right, and center. And I think Jeffrey Epstein, that whole thing really did have an impact. And this was kind of like one of the first times you were going to see that. in real time.
Yeah, I feel like we are currently also just, like, in the midst of, like, a think of the children panic generally in whatever ways that that serves whatever political agenda we have.
Yeah, we're in, like, a decidedly prudish era of culture. I think it's very interesting.
Yep.
Honey, the kids are all right, probably.
Honey, the kids are...
I was thinking of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
You know, I got that, but...
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.